and welcome to Comic Talk Today for Thursday, August 23rd, 2018. And yes, it is Thursday, which means it is time for a little Therapy Thursday. The episode of the week in which I have a guest on and we chat about whatever they want to chat about. On this particular episode, I have Joseph Duez, who's got a Kickstarter right now, Dr. Orange, that I got a chance to read. And let me tell you, it is really great. So I hope that if you listen to this podcast and you're into Kickstarters, you will definitely check it out. As of the time of the release of this episode, the Kickstarter actually has been successfully funded. So if you're a little weary about backing projects sometimes because you're not sure if they're going to be funded or not, no worries. You will be getting this book if you pledge. Without further ado, here's my chat with Joseph, and stay tuned to the end when I'll come back and talk a little bit more. I want to welcome to the show a special guest today, Joseph Duez, who's got a Kickstarter out, Dr. Orange, that I really enjoy reading, by the way. I know you sent me the PDF copy and I got to read the whole story, but what I checked out even on Webtoons, I really dug. So hello and welcome.
Hi, great to be here.
Tell me a little bit about the project that you're doing, Dr. Orange.
So Dr. Orange is a Halloween-themed psychological horror comic. It's about a woman who has a history of hallucinations, and she carves a jack-o'-lantern, and then she starts having dreams of a jack-o'-lantern coming after her, and then she wakes up, and the jack-o'-lantern's moved around, and she's not really sure whether what she's seeing is reality or hallucination.
So I want to talk a little bit about the book. I know it's not going to be out until October for the Kickstarter backers. But like I said, you can probably read, what's that now? About a little less than half the story, I guess, on Webtoons?
Yeah, so I think we have 13 pages now on Webtoons, so there's 22 total. So we're going to release the last page on the Friday before Halloween, which I think is the 26th. But if you get the PDF, that should be out near the end of September for the Kickstarter, so you should be able to actually read the ending before the Webtoons ends. The print copy I have estimated as December. I think it will probably be a little bit earlier than that. It may be November, maybe a little bit at the end of October, but it depends. Like, there's a couple things we have to do. We have to get the headshots from the people that are going to be drawn in, so that's always kind of an X factor as to how long things take, so...
Okay, see, now that it all fits in. I was trying to figure that out, because when I read the copy, I saw that one empty panel. And now that you mention it, yeah, there's people that are getting drawn into the book, so of course that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
No, that's cool. You've done Kickstarters before, right? Because you've got some other books that are listed on this Kickstarter as rewards as well.
Yeah, right. Yeah, this is our third Kickstarter. Yeah, we had, the first one was The Order of Dracula. It's about an Irish separatist. It takes place in 1900, and he allies with Dracula to help him to achieve his political goals, and the stories about him having to go through a test of loyalty to Dracula. Then the second one was Bless the Children, which was a Western about a veiled westward settlement, and there's a guy who gets separated from his group when they're moving west in Northern California, and it's the dead of winter. They get trapped in the mountains, and he kind of wanders into this small town, and it's almost abandoned, and he starts seeing children everywhere that are completely silent. And then we had a stretch goal for the Bless the Children campaign to make another comic, so we made Cat and Mouse, which is our third comic, and it's done in a manga style, and it takes place in Japan. It's about these two Japanese celebutantes, and they party a little bit too hard, and they wake up and they find themselves in this unknown village, and they have no money, and so they decide to volunteer to be contestants on a game show, and then things are really strange about the game show.
I'm curious, because you're the first person I've had on here that has done multiple Kickstarters, so I'm curious how you find the economics of Kickstarter work for you. I'm particularly curious about when you guys do print rewards, for example. So I was talking to, I think you listened to the episode with Ronnie and Aaron. We were talking about how do people make it work when you're doing like a single issue comic, right? You've done these print things in the past. What are the economics of that as opposed to say like doing a 96 page graphic novel or something like that?
Well, I haven't done any longer books on Kickstarter, so I can't really compare it. I have printed longer stuff, like we do deluxe editions of the comics. So it'll be the commentary pages and the original script will be included. So I've gotten over 100 pages with those for Order of Dracula, it was 102 pages. So it looks like to me that it's, I mean, I do digital printing, so yeah. I haven't done any offset runs yet. But for digital printing, it actually looks like I'm getting a higher profit margin on the single issue stuff.
Really?
As opposed to longer stuff because, you have to, you know, you pay a little bit extra for the binding. So, you know, it's still not a great profit margin. it's 50% or less than 50%. And that doesn't even include having to pay for art and for copyrights and for a business license and all that stuff. So
sure.
I'd say it's a little bit better as far as that goes. In my experience, I do want to do like kind of a real trade or a real hardcover at one point, probably an anthology, just kind of to see, you know, because they tend to make a little bit more money on Kickstarter, of course, because the rewards are more expensive. But I hadn't done that yet because I don't think I'm good enough at Kickstarter yet to do, like, really high goals, so.
Would this be a horror anthology? Because my ears perked up when you said anthology.
It would be a horror anthology, because I have a bunch of short horror stories. I'm having some stuff come up in anthologies, in other anthologies, that I have the rights to. So I was just thinking to just kind of put all that stuff together, and then probably add at least one story that's exclusive to that, you know, so that people kind of have something in there to look forward to if they've read everything else elsewhere.
Yeah, I'm pretty happy you brought that up. So people that listen to the show regularly know I don't shut up about anthologies. I don't know if you remember I would say even 10, 15 plus years ago, you would still get like horror comics or anthology style comics. And all that's kind of gone away. But if you get on Kickstarter, man, there's anthologies all over the place. And I'm curious, why you think that is.
So the reason for that is actually, Kickstarter is actually, I don't think it was intentional, but it's actually tailor-made for anthologies because you have so many creators involved, and all of those creators can pull in their networks. So, the kind of anthology I was talking about, which is basically just me writing, but different artists. But if you have like a real anthology where you've got, you know, 25 creators or 40 creators or whatever, and they all can pull in their own audiences, then, you know, that's like a recipe for success almost with Kickstarter, you know?
Yeah. Because
if you're just, you should never really launch alone. And if you have a bunch of creators who really want to see it succeed, then you're much better off. Even if there's, I mean, they're usually pretty high goals, even if there's high goals, you know, everybody is on board with that. Everybody is pushing it, you know, and that's one of the hardest things about Kickstarter is that, you know, you have to manage your time really well, and if you can multiply yourself, then that's definitely an advantage.
I've been thinking about that a long time. There's very few in mainstream comics. There's very few anthologies. I keep one next to me at all times on my desk. Aftershock Comics did one, I think it was earlier this year, maybe late last year. And it was earlier this year. And I think they're the only, we'll say mainstream in quotes, because Aftershock is still a very small publisher, but that has managed to put something out like that. And it was an oversized hardcover, so obviously you're paying a little bit more money. But to me, it was totally worth it. I know you're a big horror fan as well. I'm a big horror guy. I've been working my way through all the EC archive stuff. So I've read quite a chunk of that. And, you know, we don't have anything like that anymore. And I don't understand what it is. Is mainstream just too concerned about the typical same old crap?
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting. So Dark Horse is doing Creepy and Eerie. Those are probably the closest that we get to like a mainstream horror anthology these days, I guess. But as far as anthology books, even if it's other genres, even if it's like a superhero anthology book. They can't really make them sell. And they always kind of say that's because people don't stick with it. They kind of read one issue or one arc and then they leave. And I don't know if that's true, but that's generally the excuse that they've used. You know, I think getting feedback from direct market is almost impossible. So I'm not sure really the reason for that. But yeah, I think the distribution model direct market just makes it really difficult for anthologies because, you know, you get the solicits 3 months in advance and then they order kind of based on creator, you know, the creative team or the characters.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the orders tend to be kind of erratic for the anthologies. You know, so then there may be demand for it, but the shops don't know, you know. So I think that's part of the problem of the direct market with anthologies. That's why I think, because I think there are people that love anthologies and you listen, you see that on Kickstarter, especially.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, there's a lot of just, even just horror anthologies that I've seen. There was some other ones, like if there's an anthology where there's a social message or like a central mission to it, those
yeah.
like tend to do pretty well. So I think there's definitely demand for anthologies, but I think the fans are not looking at the direct market anymore and they've kind of given up on anthologies there.
That might be the case. I was thinking about that recently too when Marvel announced they were doing the, like a What If one shots. And I remember the What If, I don't know if you read Marvel What If back in the day, but they were
freaking
amazing.
What If, yeah.
Yeah, they were amazing. But you know, that was a kind of an ongoing for a while. And then I think when they try to relaunch it like two or three times in the last 10 or 15 years, and they're always really short, like, I don't know, less than 10 issue series. And now they're just doing like the 4 one-shots, or 5 one-shots. I think maybe part of the problem is with something like Kickstarter, you can appeal directly to a certain audience. And I know you mentioned like bringing in some of your pre-existing fan base if you're doing an anthology, for example. But there's definitely like
yeah.
a group of people that just follow Kickstarter projects, because they can get different things that they can't get in mainstream comics. And at the same time,
yeah,
you also don't have the gigantic overhead that you would have at like Marvel or DC, right? I mean, usually
yeah.
they probably cancel a book if they're selling, I don't know, 15,000 copies. And I mean,
yeah.
think about a Kickstarter project. If you sold 15,000 copies of your book, you'd be ecstatic.
Oh, I know. Yeah. You'd be set. Yeah. So the great thing about Kickstarter is that those people are your people, you know, those people are your audience. They're not like, it's not a comic book store's audience, you know, it's not,
mm-hmm.
It's not a distributor's audience because you have those people's emails, you know, and,
yeah.
and you can talk directly to them forever, you know, well after the campaign is over. So you can send updates from your old campaigns and direct them to your new campaigns or to your online store or whatever. So, I mean, that's what's really great about it is that you get that feedback immediately, and you know, even if most people are not going to say anything to you, you know, if they back you time and time again, then you know that you're doing something right. So you know, like so that audience really wants to be part of that. And yeah, I think there's definitely people who just are, you know, I follow a couple of these people. You know, you can follow Kickstarter users.
Yeah.
And it'll give you an email every time they back something. And I follow a couple of these people and they're like back and like you can tell when they're online because they'll go on and they'll back like 20 projects, you know, and then, you know, and even if it's just like a couple of hours, you know, for each one, there's just a cadre of people who go on there and who just back everything. And even if it's only comics, but a lot of times some of these people, they cross over on other stuff like RPGs or just whatever stuff is in other categories. But yeah, it's pretty amazing. I mean, it's not enough people to really to count on.
Yeah.
You know, but it's enough where there's like a little bit of, you know, like, yeah, I don't know if you listen to the any of the Comics Launch podcast, but he always says it's more math than magic, you know, Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it's true, but there's a little bit of magic in it in that sometimes it'll just be random people you have no idea. and they just were on Kickstarter, you know, and they're on the Discover, and they're going, oh, yeah, I'm backing that. Yeah, so.
Yeah, my only issue with Kickstarter is the search feature. I think the Discover is actually pretty good. Because, like, when I backed your project, for example, I got, like, I think one of the projects that was recommended to me I had already seen, and the other three or four were brand new to me, so I was able to check some other stuff out. But my only problem with it is the search feature, because it's not, like, a very smart search. So if I go under and type in Dr. Orange, two separate words, it's not going to find your project. But if I do Dr. Yeah. Orange, it would.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I think that's why most of my backers, like, there's, like, a dashboard page that tells you where people are coming from who back your campaign. Mm. So there's, like, some basic analytics in Kickstarter. It's not, like, to the level of Google Analytics, but, you know, like, it'll tell you these people came from Twitter, these people came from Facebook, you know, whatever. But, yeah, the vast majority of people who have backed, I think, all of my campaigns, especially this one, are coming from direct traffic.
Oh, wow.
So it'll be from people clicking directly on the website. So it's not going to be people who are trolling on, you know, trolling around on Kickstarter. There's a handful of those. But it's people I sent an email to, or they saw a social media post somewhere, and they clicked on the actual link. So I think that I agree with that. I think the search could be definitely better. It's not as bad as, like, Patreon, but it could definitely use some work.
Do you find, I know you said you find a lot of the traffic being internal. Is that, do you think, from people that backed previous ones that you did, or, like, what's your return rate, basically, on that, on existing?
I don't know if I know that what that is offhand. It's pretty decent. I think it's probably over a third. A third of backers. I think this campaign is a little bit different. I probably have a higher percentage than I had last time of return backers. I think Bless the Children kind of got out there a little bit more than the first Kickstarter we had, and even after the Kickstarter, I got some reviews, and there was, you know, some, and I went to shows, and you know, there was a lot more exposure for it. So I think the people coming back from the last campaign was, and I think it was probably better received.
Yeah.
So, it was higher than it was in the previous campaign.
Sure, sure. Do you find that doing, like, sending books out to review sites and things like that helps in any way? Cause I've thought about that a lot. I wonder, like, when you get press releases and stuff, usually what I use is Twitter for the most part. I'm off of Facebook and all that stuff. And so I get a lot of stuff scrolling through my feed. But I find myself oftentimes not going to those kind of things. I wonder if you know whether that helps a Kickstarter project to actually get the books reviewed out on a more mainstream review site, I guess.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. it's really hard to tell. I think I approached this one a little bit differently, and then I got a bunch of reviews before I launched the Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like, you know, just like a lot of my backers are actually comic creators, it seems like the people who listen to comic podcasts and the people who watch, you know, comic related YouTube are mostly comic creators too.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. I haven't heard from anyone aside from, like, you know, relatives and friends, like, you know, I haven't heard from anyone who said, oh, yeah, I heard you on whatever podcast, you know, and that's why I backed the comic. You know, because, like I said, if they do that, they will have probably heard it and then typed it in and then went to the site directly, so I won't know where they're coming from.
Yeah, that's true. Well, for
it's
anyone listening,
hard to measure.
If you're listening to this, when you go back the project, you need to tell them that you heard it on Comic Talk Today. That way, you know.
That would be extremely helpful, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough though, right? Cause like, for example, in podcasting, you have a lot of people that do advertisements or whatever, and you give them like an offer code, right? There's not a way to do that for like Kickstarter. That seems like something that would be really helpful for you guys, so you know kind of where you're getting your followers from.
Yeah, that would really help. There's a few functions of Kickstarter that I think would be really easy to implement that they have not done. So that would be one of them. Another one would be an organic sort of add-on feature, where, you know, I can just say, like, hey, if you want to add on something to one of these packages, it'll be, you know, $5 or $10 or whatever. Yeah,
because I've also done through the messaging system afterwards, right?
Yeah, and I mean, that's the thing. I usually don't even mention it because most people don't really want to do that. But yeah, I mean, you can always, any campaign, you can always message them and say, hey, I want to add this, and it's not part of my package, and, you know, how much is it going to be?
Mm-hmm.
And you can certainly do it with me anytime, but I've never had anybody who really wanted to do that. I have had people who just kind of pledged over and I said, hey, you guys, you make sure you don't want anything else? No, I just wanted to, like, give you a little bit more money. Like, okay.
No, that's cool. See, that's just the thing. Like, I never thought about doing that off the pledge, but I'm always looking for the add-ons because I like the add-ons. I prefer less rewards and more add-ons.
Yeah. So there's a, you know, I don't know if you know about, there's a couple of different sites that are doing this, like BackerKit and, CrowdOx, I think is one of the other ones. But yeah, it's kind of like a post Kickstarter, fulfillment function where, instead of people filling out the surveys on Kickstarter, they can fill it out there and then they're directed to this site that says, hey, you want anything else? Now's your chance, you know,
and
you can list whatever products, you know, you want on there. And I haven't done it because I haven't, it has some fees and I'm not like scaled enough where I think it's really worth the fees. But, yeah, the people who have done it, it's usually pretty worth it because, you know, maybe 8 or 10% of people will go on there and say, I want something else. And they'll be able to just add that and you get that. And I think they actually take PayPal too, which is something with people who didn't want to back because it's, Kickstarter doesn't take PayPal,
mm-hmm.
you know. There's definitely a way to do that, but it's only because these companies come into business because Kickstarter doesn't do it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got to be careful with those things, though. You know what I'm saying? A lot of times, people will implement features until whatever company decides, yeah, that sounds like a good idea, and then you're kind of out of business. And Apple does that a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Let's talk a little bit about the book, Dr. Orange. If I get to a place where you feel like it's a little spoilery, by all means, I'm going to try to not do that. We'll spend a couple minutes on the book. So you've got, the book takes place around Halloween time, right? It's 4 days before Halloween.
Yep.
You've got your main character is a little mentally unstable. She's schizophrenic and she's on medication. She is married. If I read the book correctly, there's a recent loss. Wasn't there a death, a funeral that's mentioned?
I don't think so.
Okay, maybe I misread that one part. I know what it was. I know what it was. It was when she was carving the pumpkin and she said something about having a funeral for the pumpkin. My bad. All right. The story basically takes kind of a journey for this main character that you have over the previous days before Halloween. And things happen that are a little supernatural seeming because the pumpkin ends up showing up whenever these crazy things happen. Now, whether those things are happening or not is kind of something that you need to read the book to figure out. But I want to know what the inspiration for the story was for you. Is this personal in any way, or is this just something that you had in your mind and you wanted to discuss?
It's personal in some ways. So I got the idea, and it was 2011, and my wife is a doctor. She was in med school then, but I was working shift work, and so I was at home, like, in the middle of the day, and nobody else was home. And I was like, oh, it's getting pretty close to Halloween. And I always like to carve a pumpkin before Halloween. And I usually put it off because I want to do something different every year. So I'm like, I want to do, you know, I like trying to think of what I want to do. So I went on my porch and I carved it. And I think, you know, like, she's not going to be home for like 8 hours or whatever. I could just stab myself. And I had this huge, you know, like, and I used these like huge knives, you know, to get open the pumpkin.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I just could stab myself and I'd bleed to death and I would die, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that was like the first thing I had. And I usually get these like thoughts about stories when I'm doing something that's really sort of like boring, you know? And that was one of those times where I was just kind of like carving the pumpkin. I was like, you know, I could probably die and nobody would know, you know? And so then I started thinking, like, well, you know, I could probably stab myself, but, you know, I could probably make it to the phone and call the police, you know, I mean, call an ambulance. And, you know, but why wouldn't I do that, you know? So I started thinking about, like, what if I, you know, like in a horror story, there's always, like, the police are either unavailable or they're in on it or they're incompetent, mm-hmm. you know, or you can't reach them. So I was thinking about, like, what's the excuse for, like, why nobody would be able to help me? And I was thinking, like, it would probably be, like, I would think they wouldn't believe me about something. And I started thinking about, you know, what if I thought that pumpkin's actually after me? And then, you know, I sort of, the story now says pretty much has most of the same story beats as I wrote it then. I wrote it, it was like a short story. And I wrote it then, and then I was like, I called it The Pumpkin, and it was before I called Dr. Orange, and it was before there was the whole history of hallucinations and everything. So a lot of those details of the story were different, but the main narrative was still there. So then I kind of forgot about that story, and I lost the story. And then last year, I was like, I wanted to spend November, like, actually scripting stuff, because I wanted to spend the first part of 2018 getting things illustrated, and I didn't have any more scripts done. So in November, I was like, instead of National Red Novel Month, I was like, it was just new National Graphic Novel Month. So the first thing I did was, like, I'm going to start with something that's easy that I know how the story's going to go. So I thought about back to that story, and I remembered most of it, but I didn't have any of it written down. So I went and totally rewrote it, and I added some stuff, and I made the role of the wife a little bit bigger. It's not that big now. It was like almost nothing on the previous version. And then I added the dog, and then I changed the genders and races of everybody. And I did a lot of research on schizophrenia, and that's one of the reasons why I did that. And then I consulted with a guy that I know from middle school, actually, who is now a psychiatrist. So I was a psychology major, but I didn't go far with it. So I talked to him about it, and he actually sees schizophrenic patients on a daily basis. So I talked to him, and I said, like, you know, I want to make this seem realistic. So most of the stuff in there is pretty realistic as far as how, you know, how schizophrenia actually works. Even the thing about having dreams and waking up and not knowing if you're still in a hallucination or whether it was a dream. Mm-hmm. You know, her medication is accurate. For somebody who's having, you know, really, really strong psychotic features.
Yeah.
So, and then so that's pretty much how it came. Then I got our colorist who I worked with before, Greg Warrenchek, did a cover. He was the line artist on Blessed Children, and so I got him to do kind of an ad for Dr. Orange in the back of her last comic, and then I used that as the cover. And then I got Milana, who was our line artist for Cat and Mouse, to do the colors. And then I found a new line artist, Raul Orte, who's our line artist for the interiors. I saw him, like, on Facebook in January. I was, like, looking for work, and I looked at all the stuff, and I was like, this is exactly, you know, what we want for this. So we kind of got it all done. It took about 5 months, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, wow, really? I was curious how you found Jose. I really like the art. It works really well for this kind of story. You know, one thing I noticed when I first looked at the Kickstarter is I was a little lost about what it was that I was going to be reading. Because the description of it almost seemed like a almost comedic thing. And then I saw the link that you had the link on there to the webtoon, so I went and checked out what you had there. And I was like, wait, this is not at all what I thought about.
Yeah.
And then I read the completed one that you sent me, and I was like, holy crap, like, this is totally not what I was expecting.
Yeah. I mean, it's not, so the whole idea is kind of absurd, you know, if I think about it. So I had, like, a couple of little jokey parts in there, but, you know, for the most part, I wanted it to be building a sense of dread, which is what I did, but tried to do in all the previous comics too. You know, you kind of have to you kind of had to acknowledge that it's kind of an absurd concept, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's almost, you know, I've had people on Instagram, I've been sharing pages on Instagram, and some people are like kind of having fun with it, you know, and then like, and then the rug kind of gets pulled out from them, you know, and they're kind of like, oh wait, you know, and I think that's actually a really good reaction, you know,
if you can
get people to kind of be like, oh, like, you know, this is fine. I like the characters and there's dreams and stuff and nobody's getting hurt, you know. but then it just gets really dark, so.
It does get very dark. I know you mentioned the, I think it was in your video, you said something about it's like Hitchcock meets John Carpenter's The Thing a little bit. And I could totally see that, man. I think I would imagine it's very hard to tell a self-contained story in a short amount of time, right? Because you all you have is one shot to tell the full story of this woman and the pumpkin and the world around them. What I find oftentimes is a lot of people that do these short one shots, they kind of tend to drag things off a little bit too long. And then you have kind of the big reveal close to the end, and then you deal with the repercussions of that towards the end of the book. Whereas with this, I think you get the introduction pretty quick, right? Within the first like two or three pages. But you get really engrossed with it because a lot of this is told through narration, right? Like there's some dialogue, but a lot of it is inner monologue that either the character's having, or I guess you could say the pumpkin in some ways is having as well. But the way that you pace it, I mean, it almost reads like an old Tales from the Crypt episode. You know what I'm saying? Where with the Dr. Yeah. Orange a little bit serving like the Crypt Keeper, even though he doesn't really talk. You just kind of do that through the inner monologue. And I really like that because it really sets the pacing up really well. And what makes a good horror story is having great pacing.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I'm always kind of, when I do these things, I don't really know how well it's going to work, you know. I kind of try to pace it like, you know, there's things happening and, you know, at first it's not too bad and maybe it's nothing. And then it's like, second time it's like, maybe it's kind of bad, you know, but it might not be too bad, and then it just kind of goes on from there.
Yeah.
And things just get worse and worse. That's how I tend to write horror stories. But the comparison to Tales from the Crypt is really flattering. That's, you know, the, like you said, the old EC comics, I mean, that's a really big inspiration for me, you know, and the Tales from the Crypt TV show too. All the EC comics, even the non-horror comics, were very similar. You know, you had the crime comics and the sci-fi comics. You know, but there were all these really short, kind of punchy stories, and they call them snap endings. You know, which I think is a great term because I couldn't think of anything better. So, it's funny because I left a lot of it ambiguous, and somebody on Instagram was like, "Hey, is that the pumpkin?" Or is that her? Like inner monologue, you know?
Uh-huh.
I'm like, you know, it's up to you. And what I really tried to do with this story is to make the audience kind of part of the story.
Yeah.
She's an unreliable narrator, and that's kind of where the Edgar Allan Poe inspiration was coming in. You know, so she established at the beginning she's an unreliable, and she knows she's an unreliable narrator. But then when it switches away from her perspective, you know, then you're more in the reader's perspective, and you're thinking, are you the unreliable narrator, you know? So, you know, and there's a lot of stuff in the story. There's a lot of little things that are there that are kind of inconsistent with the story. So, you know, like Dr. Orange's personal pronouns change back and forth, and there's a reason for that. And so it's one of those things where I was really trying to get the reader to be involved and kind of part of the story.
Yeah, I like that. I like it. Definitely dug the secondary ending. That's one thing that I always loved about those old horror stories is you get kind of a resolution, but then something happens and you're like, wait, what? And that's always nice to see. So, yeah, I really dug this. I hope. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, the false ending, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I really enjoyed it, and I think the level that I backed it at, because I want to see the rest of your books. So I think I backed the $10 level where you get all the PDFs for the old books. I'm curious to read some of that stuff as well. I think you had wasn't there an ad for one of the other ones in the PDF? Yeah, I think there was.
Oh yeah, that's one of us, our upcoming one. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
So yeah, we'll have a sort of sequel to the Order of Dracula books called The Crusader Dracula that we're working on now. So it'll be next year, probably late next year sometime. That's nice. Going to be our first mini series. So I'm going to have to figure out how to actually write something that isn't self-contained. but yeah, it's, I couldn't, it ended up being like 96 pages and I was like, I can't probably finance this, like just doing it all at once, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
So I'm probably going to release it at 3 issues and then do a trade probably or maybe a hardcover. I don't know. After we're done with it, but yeah, it's a story about, Dracula in World War I, and he's trying to take down the Ottoman Empire, and it's kind of like if Lawrence of Arabia meets Dracula and the Arabian Nights, because he has to get in touch with Scheherazade, who is the narrator from the Arabian Nights, and in the story she's like this undead immortal who survives on collecting stories. So anyway.
No, I dig it. I'll definitely, yeah, so, I'm looking forward to that one too. I think it's time that we wrap it up.
All right.
I want to thank you for joining again. Why don't you let people know where they can find you and of course the Kickstarter.
Okay. So our Kickstarter is at, drorangecomic.com. So we're live through September 7th. So, we have 21 days to go. Our company website is www.heresystudiosllc.com. That's our the publishing company, Heresy Studios. And then you can find me on Twitter at Heresy Studios LL, because I hit the character limit. And then we have a Facebook page, Heresy Studios LLC, and Instagram, Heresy Studios LLC Comic.
Fantastic. I want to thank Joseph DeWes once again for joining me on the podcast. It was a pleasure chatting with him about Kickstarter and, of course, his book. Be sure to check it out. You can go to just drorangecomic.com and do so there. It'll take you right to the Kickstarter page. If you want to get in touch with me, the best place to do so is, of course, on Twitter, at Geekvine. You can email nerdylegion@gmail.com. If you want to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/nerdylegion. I'll be back tomorrow with a brand new episode. I'll catch you then.